When you look out at the Los Angeles skyline, you naturally think that building a city is mostly about physical limits.
Right, like the raw materials and engineering. Yeah.
Exactly. You think about like how much raw steel costs or how deep the bedrock goes or, how many construction workers you can physically fit on a site.
Yeah.
It is tangible, right? You can see the crane, you can touch the concrete. But the biggest hurdle to putting a roof over someone's head in California isn't a physical wall at all.
Not even close.
It is an entirely invisible barrier. I mean, we are looking at a sprawling landscape of paperwork, strategic legal filings, and just pure excruciating time.
It's the absolute definition of bureaucratic muddy waters. I mean, the physical constraints, the materials, the engineering, labor, those are just math problems, really.
Right.
The regulatory constraints, however, are an entirely different labyrinth.
Which is exactly why we are diving into this today.
Right.
So, welcome to this custom-tailored deep dive. We're opening up the ledger on a newly released 2026 policy study.
The Los Angeles CEQA Litigation Atlas.
Yes, the Los Angeles CEQA Litigation Atlas. And the mission here for you listening is to navigate one of the most complex, frustrating, and honestly fascinating bottlenecks in modern urban development.
And this atlas is incredibly valuable for anyone trying to understand modern cities because it catalogs the specific lawsuits that actually moved units, money, and time in LA housing between the years 2015 and 2025.
And we really have to set the stage for you here because the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, as literally everyone in the industry calls it, is the single most named lever in the entire Los Angeles housing debate.
Oh, absolutely. Every developer, every neighborhood association, every politician talks about it.
Yeah, but paradoxically, it is the least quantified lever. I mean, until this atlas came out.
Precisely. People
Yeah.
constantly throw the acronym around. It's framed either as a sacred shield protecting our fragile environment, or on the flip side, as a weapon destroying our housing supply.
Right.
But rarely do we stop to look at the actual granular ledger of what it does mechanically on the ground.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because
Bruh.
the Atlas's headline, finding, completely reframes how you should think about this law. The study reveals that CEQA is rarely a clean stop signal.
Right.
It isn't a red light. It is the delay tax.
And that distinction changes everything. I mean, the true cost of CEQA in Los Angeles isn't typically found in the cases that the city or the developer flat out loses in court.
Right, the outright losses are rare.
Exactly. The real characteristic cost is the massive carrying cost accumulated while projects just sit in absolute limbo.
Yeah.
It is the years that a project simply does not exist while the procedural machinery just grinds away.
I was trying to visualize this while I was going through the research, and the best analogy I can give you is it's a toll booth.
A toll booth.
Yeah.
Right.
Think of CQA not as a giant brick wall blocking the highway to building housing. Think of it as a toll booth. But the currency at this toll booth isn't just cash, it's time.
Lots of time.
Right, and the Atlas calculates the exact exchange rate. It is a mean delay of 3.4 years per case.
3.5 years of purgatory. I mean, to really understand the mechanics of a tax like that, we have to examine the hard numbers and look at the counterfactual.
Meaning, what exactly would happen if this toll booth simply did not exist?
Right.
Well, let's lay out the data, because the scale here is staggering. The Atlas zeroes in on a data set spanning 2015 to 2025. And they analyzed 12 specific litigations.
And those were chosen specifically to represent the whole spectrum of outcomes.
Exactly. And across just those dozen cases, we are looking at 18,739 housing units tangled up in lawsuits. And again, all suffering that 3.4-year average delay.
And here is where that counterfactual ledger comes in. If we track those 18,000 plus units that passed through a CEQA suit, only 1,525 were lost outright.
Yeah.
Meaning the environmental impact report, the EIR as it's known, was totally vacated by a judge, or the project was entirely scaled down to zero housing units. But a massive 17,076 units were delayed and eventually approved.
So they made it through the toll booth. They just had to sit in traffic for years.
Right. And what's fascinating here is that the authors of the Atlas are very intellectually honest about what this data actually means.
How so?
Well, the claim isn't, oh, all 17,000 of these units would magically exist tomorrow without CEQA.
Right, of course not.
We know that financing matters, macroeconomic interest rates matter, a developer's logistical ability to actually execute the project matters.
Right, but I have to push back here, or at least challenge the premise a bit.
Sure.
Real estate development is inherently risky. projects take a long time to finance, to design, and to get permitted literally anywhere in the world.
Sure.
So isn't a multi-year timeline just the, you know, the assumed cost of doing business in a major real estate market like Los Angeles? Why is CEQA specifically taking the blame for what might just be normal bureaucratic friction?
It's a very fair question, but we have to look at the actual mechanism of the delay. This isn't just waiting in line for a standard building permit.
When a CEQA lawsuit is filed, it legally forces the developer to halt progress and often commission hundreds, sometimes thousands of pages of new environmental studies.
Like what kind of studies?
Traffic impacts, shadow analyses, noise projections. And those studies then have to be publicly reviewed, debated, and legally certified.
Right.
That specific legal mechanism acts as a binding cost on the system. It guarantees a multi-year stall.
And the cost of standing still during that stall is mind-blowing. Let's look at the 8150 Sunset Boulevard mixed-use project in Hollywood. This was litigated back in 2017.
Yes.
This was going to be a striking Frank Gehry design tower. He gets hit with a lawsuit. It survives a complete redo of its environmental impact report, and it gets approved on a second pass.
Right.
But because of the procedural timeline, it lost two entire construction cycles. The estimated carrying cost for that delay, $18
million. $18 million. And we need to explain why a delay costs that much. That isn't just a fine paid to the city.
No, not at all.
That is the cost of holding a massive commercial real estate loan and paying interest while literally zero revenue is coming in.
Right, and paying property taxes on an empty lot.
Exactly. It's keeping high-priced attorneys and architects on retainer for years just to respond to procedural hurdles.
It's just like hemorrhaging money to exist in a paused state.
Pretty much.
So if this delay tax is so incredibly costly, you naturally have to ask, you know, who is standing there collecting the toll? Who exactly is pulling the lever and filing these suits?
Right, the plaintiffs.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time looking at this section of the Atlas, and they categorize the plaintiffs into five distinct archetypes that account for every single case in the study.
Which are quite revealing.
They really are. You have viewshed neighbors, labor leverage, tactical shell coalitions.
The single plaintiff TOC is another.
Yes, the single plaintiff TOC, and finally, the massive plan level objector.
And we should probably briefly clarify what a single plaintiff TOC is, as it's a very specific Los Angeles phenomenon.
Yeah, please do.
TOC stands for Transit-Oriented Communities. It's a program meant to incentivize developers to build dense housing right next to public transit lines, right, to reduce car traffic.
Which sounds very environmentally friendly.
Exactly. And yet, there is an entire archetype of single plaintiffs who specifically target and sue these very transit-friendly projects under environmental laws.
Which feels entirely contradictory. But if we're talking about scale, we have to start with the heavyweight champion of these lawsuits, right? The plan-level objector.
The big ones.
Look at the Hollywood Community Plan update from 2023. This wasn't a lawsuit against one building or, you know, one developer.
No, it was a systemic challenge.
Right. It was a single lawsuit filed by a group called Hollywoodians Encouraging Logical Planning, and they sued the entire area-wide zoning plan.
A single suit against a neighborhood-wide plan is rare, but as the Atlas meticulously notes, when it happens, the blast radius dwarfs every per-project case combined.
Dwarfs is putting it mildly. I mean, by legally challenging the underlying plan, this one lawsuit effectively froze the upzoning capacity for roughly 14,000 housing units across Hollywood.
14,000.
Yeah, and the mechanism of the suit caused an eight-year delay. 8 years of zero forward momentum for a whole neighborhood.
And the cost.
The estimated carrying cost across that delay is a staggering $110 million.
It is the largest single CQA loss in the entire beta set.
By far.
Now, moving from the macro scale to the highly tactical, the study identifies a distinct pattern within the labor leverage archetype.
Okay, yeah.
This is often referred to in policy circles as green mail.
Right.
It's a mechanism where union groups file CQA suits using environmental claims, say, questioning a project's air quality impact to legally halt the project.
But they're not really after air quality.
Well, the strategy is to force the developer to the bargaining table to negotiate labor agreements.
And it's important to look at this strictly through the lens of mechanics for you listening. Regardless of anyone's personal stance on union negotiations or wages, the data simply shows how the structure of this environmental law is utilized as a primary legal lever.
Exactly.
Take the Crossroads Hollywood project, for example.
Right. Crossroads Hollywood involved 950 housing units. A CEQA lawsuit was filed by Unite Here Local 11.
Yeah.
Because of the procedural mandates of the law, it resulted in a 5-year delay and a $42 million carrying cost before it was ultimately settled.
And the terms of that settlement?
A project labor agreement and wage covenants. And interestingly, the environmental claims were dropped once the labor agreement was signed.
Wow. And look at the 1850 Wilshire Boulevard project in Westlake in 2023. Almost 700 units delayed for 2 years, generating a $14 million carrying cost.
Right.
The plaintiff there was IBUW Local 11. They settled the project labor agreement. The project survived. But according to the Atlas, it was priced 8% higher per door as a direct result of that timeline.
It is a highly effective lever, clearly. But perhaps the most jarring archetype to observe in the wild is what the Atlas calls the Tactical Shell Coalition.
Yes. When I read the mechanics of this one, I immediately thought of them as like pop-up roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost phantom litigation.
Phantom litigation is a good way to put it.
Right. Look at what happened on Industrial Street in the Arts District. 472 units in dispute. The plaintiff is an entity called the Coalition for Responsible Development.
Which sounds very official, very community-oriented.
It sounds so official. But the timeline of that coalition's existence tells the real story.
Exactly. According to the study, this entity was legally created just weeks before the lawsuit was filed.
Wow.
They force a 3-year delay through the courts. They ring up an $11 million carrying cost for the developer. They force a settlement with affordability commitments. And then
you just dissolve.
They vanish.
They just pop up out of nowhere, stop traffic, extract a toll, and completely disappear.
It perfectly illustrates how the fundamental structure of CEQA can be utilized by anonymous or temporary groups to exert massive financial pressure without ever having to prove a long-standing environmental grievance.
Right.
But, you know, while most of these tactics result in settlements or just agonizing multi-year delays, what happens when CEQA actually does deliver a fatal blow?
Right, because sometimes the toll booth actually is a brick wall. And this is where my jaw hit the floor. Let's look at the Sportsman's Lodge redevelopment in Studio City back in 2020.
A very telling case.
This was a project slated to build 520 housing units. It gets hit with a lawsuit by the Studio City Residents Association.
Which is a classic example of the viewshed neighbors archetype.
Yeah, exactly. People who don't want their local sight lines or traffic patterns disrupted.
And we need to look at the ultimate outcome of that specific delay.
It was a 4-year delay, a $30 million carrying cost. And eventually, the pressure was so great that the project was scaled to 0 housing units. It was entirely rebuilt as a commercial, retail-only complex, net housing delivered. Mm-hmm. 0.
Yeah.
And I have to push back hard on the core logic of a system that allows this.
Go ahead.
How does an environmental law end up erasing 520 homes, homes that would likely concentrate people near existing infrastructure, but gives the green light to a sprawling retail project?
Right.
Isn't forcing people to commute further away to find housing exactly what environmental laws fighting sprawl are supposed to prevent?
It's a profound contradiction, and it highlights how the letter of the law, the strict procedural requirements for traffic or aesthetic impacts, can be used to achieve outcomes that seem entirely divorced from the broader spirit of environmental protection.
Like reducing greenhouse gas emissions through dense housing.
Exactly. It's baffling. And the complexities of the law only deepen when we look at the fault line dispute with the Hollywood Center Towers.
Oh man, this one.
We are talking about 1,005 housing units stalled by a group called Stop the Millennium Hollywood. The legal claim was centered over a fault line geology trace.
Right, because it sits adjacent to the Hollywood Fault, which on its face sounds like a very valid, serious environmental and safety concern.
Sure.
I mean, you don't want to burg a skyscraper on a fault line.
Absolutely not. But the Atlas notes that the exact trace of the fault is scientifically disputed.
Okay.
So what you get is a paralyzed system. The mechanism here is that the environmental impact report was totally vacated by the court.
Meaning?
That means the developer has to start from scratch. The project has suffered a 6-year delay, accumulated $60 million in carrying costs, and as of the publication of this 2026 Atlas, they are still litigating it.
Still litigating?
Yeah.
6 years of fighting over geology maps. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, yes.
Because the legal boundaries of what constitutes an environmental impact under CEQA have been stretched to places you wouldn't believe.
It's quite something.
Enter the UC Berkeley Enrollment EIR. Now, this isn't the Los Angeles case, but the Atlas includes it because it sent absolute shockwaves through the entire state's legal system.
Yes. A statewide precedent from 2022 that fundamentally reshaped developer risk models everywhere, including down in Los Angeles.
The plaintiffs, a group called Save Berkeley's Neighborhoods, successfully argued in a California Supreme Court ruling that, legally speaking, under CEQA, students count as a noise impact.
Students?
Students. Human beings existing, talking, and walking to class were legally classified as an environmental noise pollutant to stall the construction of housing.
It really showcases the extreme elasticity of the law. And we should briefly flag the Television City expansion case, just to remind you listening, that CEQA touches every land use, not just housing.
Right.
That case had zero residential units, but a neighborhood coalition used the exact same CEQA mechanisms to tie it up for 3 years, generating $24 million in carrying costs.
Unbelievable.
Whether it's a student dorm, a retail hub, a TV studio, or an apartment building, the lever works the exact same way.
So hearing all this, projects being stripped of housing in favor of retail, fault lines trapped in endless litigation, human beings being legally classified as noise pollutants, you have to ask, are we just stuck?
It can definitely feel that way.
Is there any way to fight back against this sclerosis?
Well, the system is reacting. The Atlas dedicates its final section to what it calls the reform stack.
The reform stack. I love that term.
Very catchy.
It sounds like something out of a tech startup.
It kind of is, conceptually. This is a growing arsenal of legislative levers that have recently been enacted to specifically narrow CEQA's reach over housing.
Okay.
It's the state's attempt to strike back at the delay tax.
And the Atlas outlines four specific legislative fixes that make up this stack. Let's walk through them. First up, you have SB 35 from 2017.
Right. SB 35 carves out a streamlined ministerial review path for qualifying multifamily projects.
And ministerial is the key word there.
Right. Yes. It means if a project meets the objective zoning rules, it gets a permit over the counter. There are no discretionary hearings and therefore no CEQA trigger.
Wow.
It exempts projects entirely if they meet specific affordability and labor criteria.
And we know it works mechanically because the Atlas cites the Lake Balboa project. Viewshed neighbors tried to block a 360-unit development, but the developer used SB 35, and that streamlining was upheld in a 2023 appellate ruling.
Exactly.
Then you have AB 1307 from 2023.
Right. That was the direct legislative fix to the bizarre UC Berkeley case. The state government essentially had to pass a new law explicitly stating that, for the purposes of CEQ, students are not noise.
The fact that they had to write that down in a legal statute just to build housing is still wild to me.
It is pretty absurd.
Then we have AB 1633, also from 2023. This one gives developers actual teeth. It allows them to use the Housing Accountability Act to sue cities that intentionally misuse CEQ or to deny housing that otherwise perfectly complies with local zoning.
Right. And finally, locally in Los Angeles, you have ED1 from 2022. This is Mayor Bass's directive that created a 100% affordable ministerial path.
Taking away that discretion again.
Again, utilizing that mechanism of removing discretionary review to bypass the CEQA toll booth entirely for affordable projects.
And this all leads to what the Atlas calls the ultimate test case.
Yeah.
The 6400 Sunset Project.
Yes, this is a big one.
This happened in 2024. A developer proposed a 369-unit, 100% affordable project under the ED1 directive. And right on cue, a group of viewshed neighbors called Sunset and Vine Neighbors filed a CEQA challenge.
But this time the project was armed with the new exemption stack.
Right.
Specifically the ED1 directive combined with the teeth of AB 1633.
And the stack held up. The exemption was upheld in court. The project only suffered a half-year delay and a $1.4 million carrying cost.
Which is a huge win.
I mean, compared to the $110 million or $60 million disasters we talked about earlier, that is practically a miracle for the developer.
And what's fascinating here is if we connect this to the bigger picture, the Atlas makes a bold declaration about this specific case.
What's that?
It suggests that if this legal pattern continues, 100% affordable ED1 projects are functionally CEQA immune in Los Angeles.
Functionally immune.
That is a massive tectonic shift in the regulatory landscape.
It is huge. But I have to give you another analogy here, because reading about this reform stack really got me thinking.
Sure.
It feels exactly like a series of desperate software patches trying to fix crippling bugs in a legacy 1970s operating system.
I can see that.
You know, like, oh, the system crashed because it thinks students are noise, deploy patch AB1307. Or, oh, the system is letting shell companies freeze affordable housing. Quick, deploy patch ED1.
That's a very apt comparison, honestly. The base code is from 1970, and the modern city is entirely different.
Right. But my question is, are we just patching a fundamentally broken system? I mean, is this exemption stack actually a sustainable long-term fix? Or are we just endlessly piling patches on top of an operating system that can no longer run its basic functions just because we're too afraid to rewrite the base code?
That is the existential question of California land use, which brings us to the ultimate so what of this entire study.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? Why should you care about carrying costs or ministerial reviews or tactical shell coalitions?
It affects everything around you.
It does. The Atlas connects these granular findings to adjacent studies that hit right at home. For example, it directly links this litigation delay to the LARHNA delivery gap.
The regional housing needs assessment.
Right. Basically, Los Angeles fell significantly behind its housing delivery goals for the 2021 to 2029 cycle. And this study points to CEQA litigation delay as one of the three primary quantifiable reasons why those homes just do not exist.
And it also connects the findings to a broader, really fascinating economic theory. The Atlas mentions Manker Olson's theory of institutional sclerosis.
Institutional sclerosis.
Right. This is the idea that over time, politically stable societies accumulate distributional coalitions.
Which are basically special interest groups.
Essentially, yes. And over time, these groups learn how to use well-intentioned rules and regulations, not for the public good, but to extract leverage, money, and concessions for themselves.
Wow.
The labor leverage tactics and the pop-up shell coalitions cataloged in this data set are a perfect textbook illustration of that institutional sclerosis in action.
The arteries of the city just get clogged.
Exactly. The arteries just get clogged.
It's not just a housing problem. It's a symptom of a system that is completely calcified.
Precisely. And I think that leaves us with a final provocative thought to really mull over.
Let's hear it.
The data in this atlas clearly shows that the original intent of CEQA, you know, protecting our air, our water, our fragile ecology, has very often been co-opted.
Yeah.
Today, it's used for labor negotiations. It's used for view preservation by wealthy neighbors who don't want traffic. It's used for tactical shell company leverage.
It's a toll booth where anyone can collect the toll as long as they know how to file the paperwork.
Exactly. And so if we have reached a point where we have to build an entirely separate reform stack of laws, SB 35, AB 1633, ED1, just to exempt affordable housing from our state's primary environmental protection law,
yeah,
we have to ask ourselves a difficult question. Is the ultimate solution to keep endlessly expanding these exemptions, continually patching that 1970 software? Or is it time to finally fundamentally redefine what an environmental impact actually is in the 21st century?
If an environmental law is blocking dense urban housing and inadvertently promoting retail sprawl, does it still deserve to be called an environmental law?
Exactly.
That is a question that is going to linger with me for a long time. Well, we want to warmly thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
Thanks for listening.
Whether you're navigating the housing market, working in policy, or just trying to understand why your city looks the way it does, we hope this gives you a completely new lens to view the skyline. Keep questioning the systems around you, keep looking for those invisible toll booths, and we'll see you next time.